For decades, I mean, literally since the beginning of modern computing, if you wanted to build software, you had to start with syntax. You know, you had to memorize the semicolon.
Oh, yeah, the brackets, the weird format.
Exactly. The brackets, the incredibly specific phrasing of a programming language, just to get a computer to put, like, the words, hello world, on a screen. The barrier to entry was basically this massive wall of highly technical, unforgiving text. But now, and this is what we're getting into today, you don't start with syntax anymore. You start with a sentence.
It really is a profound paradigm shift. I mean, we are moving away from a reality where developers function as these like manual translators who painstakingly type out every single command.
Right.
And we're moving into this environment where they act much more like directors. They're managing this incredibly fast automated process through natural language.
Yeah, that shift from typing to directing. That is the core of what we are unpacking today. Welcome to the deep dive, by the way. I was recently reading through this fascinating source material. It's called Vibe Coding Workflow: The Complete 2026 Guide to AI-Powered Development.
It's a great guide, very comprehensive.
It really is. It's put together by this group called Vibe Coding Masters, and they basically map out exactly how this concept of, you know, vibe coding went from being this niche internet meme to an absolutely mainstream, non-negotiable engineering practice here in 2026.
Yeah, you really can't ignore it anymore.
For sure. So my goal for this deep dive is to basically extract the ultimate roadmap from this guide for you, the listener. Because whether you are like a total beginner who has never written a single line of code in your life, or you are a seasoned pro trying to just adapt your workflow, we are going to look at the practical mechanics of directing AI to build software at lightning speed. And crucially, without ending up with a completely broken mess.
Right, because that's the risk, isn't it? The guide actually makes a super compelling argument that your focus has to be on quality and process, not just speed.
Yeah, speed is easy now.
Exactly. Because the tools have evolved at such a blistering pace, the human workflow wrapping around those tools had to mature, like, instantly, just to prevent absolute chaos.
Okay, let's unpack this because I want to look at the origin of this whole thing before we get into the mechanics of how you actually do it. The term itself, vibe coding, it sounds very casual, like almost dismissive.
It does. It sounds like something teenagers would say on TikTok.
Yeah, exactly. But it was actually coined by Andrej Karpathy, you know, the highly respected AI researcher back in, I think it was early 2025.
Yeah, early 2025 is right.
And it caught on so wildly that Collins Dictionary actually named it a word of the year, which is wild.
Yeah.
And looking at the 2026 data in this source guide, developer surveys are indicating that over 90% of U.S. developers are relying on these AI tools daily. 90%.
It's staggering. And, you know, that rapid cultural ascension from this fringe joke to an industry standard, it's driven by three distinct forces.
Okay, what are they?
The first one, predictably, is raw speed. I mean, we are talking about eliminating hours of repetitive, boring boilerplate coding. Take something like setting up a basic CRUD API.
Oh, right. And for anyone listening who hasn't spent time in like the back-end trenches, CRE stands for Create, Read, Update, Delete. It is essentially the fundamental architecture of almost every app ever made.
Exactly.
Like whenever you post a photo or read a feed or update a caption or delete a comment,
yeah,
you are interacting with a CRE at API.
And setting up those basic functions used to be a really tedious, hours-long chore for a developer. You just type the same structural code over and over. But today, using these vibe coding tools, those identical structures are generated, wired up, and functioning in literally a matter of minutes.
Wow. Which, I guess, completely opens the door to the second driving force, right?
Yeah.
Accessibility.
Yes, accessibility is huge.
This is a total game changer for non-engineers. You've got product managers, designers, subject matter experts, people who understand a business problem incredibly well.
Mm.
But they never sat down and learned the syntax of Python or JavaScript. And now they're building working prototypes themselves.
They don't need a translator anymore.
Right. The guide notes that on a lot of popular AI app building platforms today, a massive portion of the user base has zero formal engineering background, none at all.
And the downstream effect of that accessibility is the third force, economics.
Of course, money.
Always. The financial cost of standing up a basic software product has just plummeted for early stage teams. I mean, a single individual, if they're armed with a disciplined vibe coding workflow, can execute a volume of work that historically required a whole dedicated team of junior and mid-level developers.
That's incredible.
It fundamentally lowers the barrier to entry for newcomers. And at the same time, veteran engineers are suddenly freed from all that repetitive typing, so they can focus entirely on high-level architecture, system design, the hard stuff.
You know, the source code uses this brilliant analogy to describe the actual feeling of this process. It says, vibe coding isn't like using a calculator, because with a calculator, you punch in a formula and you get a guaranteed perfect mathematical result.
Right. It's deterministic.
Exactly. But vibe coding is much more like collaborating with a brilliantly fast but occasionally overconfident junior developer. You steer them by feel and intent rather than micromanaging every single character they type.
I love that analogy. It captures the dynamic perfectly, because to manage that overconfident junior developer effectively, your workflow has to evolve. We have to draw a hard line between the early days of AI assistance and what true vibe coding actually is now.
Right, because traditional AI assist was essentially just glorified autocomplete. Like, you'd be typing your code and the tool might suggest the next three or four lines of logic just to save you a few keystrokes.
Yeah, you were still the one driving. True vibe coding completely flips that ratio.
Flips it how?
Well, the AI is drafting entire functions now. Massive multi-file features, sometimes full applications from scratch. The human's job is no longer writing the bulk of the text. The human acts as the director and essentially the ultimate quality gatekeeper.
So you're not a writer, you're an editor.
Exactly. The human defines the requirements, catches the inevitable logical blind spots, and makes those critical judgment calls that an AI, which frankly lacks real-world business context, simply cannot make.
Okay, so how does someone actually do that? The guide breaks this daily interaction down into a structured five-phase session. Let's make this concrete for the listener.
Sure. Let's run a scenario.
Say I am a founder. I have no coding background, but I want to build a simple app to track my daily budget. I've got my laptop. I've got my idea. Walk me through what this five-phase loop actually looks like under the hood.
Okay. Phase one is context gathering. The AI cannot build your budget app in a vacuum. A modern AI tool will autonomously scan your entire file tree. It reads your software dependencies. It even analyzes your past code commits.
Wait, really? It looks at my old code?
Oh, absolutely. It absorbs the specific style instruction of your project. This is so the code it generates actually fits your unique environment rather than just, you know, spitting out some generic template from a tutorial.
So it's actively reading the room before it even speaks.
Precisely. Which brings us to phase two, planning. For a request like a budget tracker, a good tool won't just start writing blindly. It outlines a multi-step plan first.
Like a blueprint.
Yeah. It will tell you, first, I will create the database model for an expense. Then I'll build the backend route to save that expense. Finally, I will build the user interface to display the chart.
Okay, hold on. I've got a major question here. Pushing back on behalf of anyone who has actually managed a software project before, the guide insists the human has to review all this output, right?
Yes. Highly encouraged. Mandatory, really.
But reading and debugging someone else's messy code is notoriously harder and way more time-consuming than just writing it yourself from scratch. Yeah. If I have to police every single line this AI generates for my budget app, aren't I actually just slowing myself down?
Yeah, that is the fundamental friction of this entire movement. And you're completely right. The workflow breaks down entirely if you ask the AI to build the entire app in one massive prompt.
So I can't just type, build me a budget tracker and go grab a coffee.
Definitely not. If you do that, you'll return to an unusable, hallucinated mess of code that is completely impossible to untangle. The guide stresses over and over that you must prompt in incredibly small, specific steps.
Got it. Small step.
You review a 10-line change, not a 10,000-line change.
Okay. So you're evaluating the diffs, you know, the small differences between the old code and the new code, rather than reading the whole file every single time.
Exactly. And that leads right into phase three, generation. This is where the code is actually written out. But the real magic, the thing that makes this work, happens in phase four. Execution and testing.
Because it's not just dumping text into a document.
Right. Modern tools don't just dump text into your editor. They actively run the code in an integrated terminal. They execute your automated tests. And this is the crazy part. They read their own error messages.
So if my budget app crashes when I try to save like a $20 coffee expense, the AI actually sees the crash log itself.
Yes. It sees the stack trace.
Right.
And that triggers phase five, iteration. The AI attempts to adjust its own code based on the error. Or, alternatively, the human steps in to refine the prompt, clarifying the logic. It's this continuous collaborative loop.
That is wild. The guide keeps using this term agentic IDEs when talking about the tools driving this loop.
Hmm.
I know an IDE is an integrated development environment, basically the software program where you write code, like Microsoft Word, but for programming. But what exactly makes an IDE agentic?
Yeah, so agency refers to the tool's ability to take independent action. Traditional autocomplete, it waits for you to type. It's entirely passive.
Right.
An agentic tool takes initiative. When you ask it to build that budget chart, it doesn't just suggest the text. It actively creates a new file. It navigates to your routing configuration to add the new page. It opens your terminal, installs the necessary charting libraries, and wires them all together.
Wow. So it's basically clicking around your computer for you.
Exactly. It executes a multi-step plan across your entire system without requiring you to manually open and edit each individual file.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the source outlines a pretty wild landscape for these tools in 2026. Like, Cursor AI is a massive player right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's built on top of VS Code, which is already the industry standard, so it has incredibly deep context to your code base.
Cursor is huge.
And then you have platforms like Windsurf, which heavily lean into that autonomous agentic behavior with very little handholding.
Right, but you have to remember, the ecosystem is notoriously volatile. I mean, in just the last year, we've seen major platforms change ownership or shut down variants entirely.
Oh, completely. It's moving so fast.
The specific brand names on the tools will inevitably change, but the underlying workflow context, planning, generation, testing, iteration, that remains incredibly stable. That's what you need to learn.
Yeah, like there's also GitHub Copilot, which obviously started as that inline autocomplete we talked about earlier, but has aggressively expanded into these agent-style tasks. And for pure reasoning, when developers hit a wall with complex architecture decisions, they still lean heavily on conversational interfaces, you know, like ChatGPT or Claude AI, just to talk through the logic.
Yeah, using them as a sounding board. And the guide makes a vital distinction here in how you apply these tools depending on what part of the application you are building. The approach to front-end development is vastly different from back-end development.
I love how the source frames this. So front-end work using frameworks like React or Next.js to build the buttons, the menus, the visual layout of your budget app that can be vibe-coded incredibly fast.
Oh, lightning fast.
Because you describe a component, the AI builds it, you look at it on your screen, and you instantly know if it looks right or wrong. It's like having an AI paint your house. You can stand on the sidewalk, look at the wall, and immediately tell if they painted it neon green instead of white.
That's true. The visual feedback loop is instantaneous. However, the human still bears the responsibility for the invisible front-end elements.
Like what?
Well, you have to explicitly mandate responsiveness for different screen sizes. You have to check accessibility standards for screen readers and handle edge cases like, what does the screen display if the user's internet drops while loading their budget data? The AI will frequently just ignore those unglamorous details unless you explicitly prompt for them.
Yeah. That makes sense. But back-end vibe coding, building the databases, the servers, the hidden logic using Python, Java, or Node.js, that is entirely different. Back-end vibe coding is having the AI do your plumbing.
The plumbing analogy is perfect because back-end work relies entirely on abstract data flow and logical correctness.
Right. You aren't visually iterating on a pretty button anymore.
Exactly. You are asking the model to construct a database query or maybe draft a secure authentication route.
And if you don't aggressively double-check the plumbing, the leak is going to ruin the entire house. A mistake in the back end is completely invisible until the exact moment it hits production, breaks the application, or, you know, far worse, exposes sensitive user data to the open internet.
And because of that invisible risk, models like Claude and GitHub Copilot are often favored for complex back-end tasks over the faster models. They demonstrate a much stronger capacity for multi-step logic reasoning. In the back end, raw generation speed is basically meaningless. Meticulous human review is paramount.
That brings us to the absolute critical catch of this entire movement. We've talked about the speed and the power, but building on that plumbing leak concept, there are severe real-world dangers to getting this workflow wrong.
Oh, absolutely. And the data backs up those concerns. Multiple industry audits conducted throughout 2026 have flagged a significant rise in code quality degradation and security vulnerabilities.
So the code is getting worse.
In some ways, yes. Unreviewed AI-generated code carries a meaningfully higher rate of security flaws than code written organically by a human engineer.
But wait, why is the AI so bad at security? If it has read the entire internet, shouldn't it know how to write secure code?
You would think so, right? But it fundamentally comes down to how these AI models are trained. They are, at their core, highly advanced pattern matching engines.
Okay.
They are trying to complete the sequence of text in the most statistically likely way based on their training data. But security requires the exact opposite
Oh, I
approach.
see.
Security requires adversarial thinking. A hacker isn't looking for the most likely path. They are actively hunting for the hidden, unlikely edge case that breaks the system.
Wow. Yeah.
So the AI is focused on making the code function normally. It's not focused on how a malicious actor might exploit a specific vulnerability.
And the guide points out that the deployment phase is where this risk completely peaks. Deployment is, when you take the code off your local laptop and put it on the live internet.
Yes, exactly.
So developers use tools like Docker, which packages the app into a standardized container so it runs reliably anywhere, and hosting platforms like Vercel or Netlify to actually serve it to users. The guide highlights this juncture as the moment where human scrutiny must be absolute.
Because the most common and frankly catastrophic errors involve environment variables and digital secrets.
Like passwords and API keys.
Yes. When an AI is trying to quickly troubleshoot, say, a failing connection to a database or a payment gateway like Stripe, it might take the path of least resistance. It might hard code your private API key directly into a front-end file just to get it working.
Oh, no.
And if a developer blindly approves that change and deploys it to a platform like Vercel, that secret key is instantly exposed to the public. The real-world consequences are immediate and severe.
Okay, so if the AI is prone to making these hidden catastrophic mistakes, doesn't this workflow actually make things infinitely more dangerous for beginners? Like, a beginner doesn't even know what an environment variable is, let alone how to spot a leak API key in a massive wall of generated text. Are they just going to ship broken, vulnerable applications?
This raises an important question, and the guide addresses this tension head-on by establishing a golden rule. Never treat AI output as a final product.
Ever.
Ever. It must always, without exception, be viewed as a strong first draft. The goal for a beginner is not to use AI to bypass learning the fundamental concepts of computer science.
Right, you can't just skip the hard part.
Exactly. The goal is to use AI to learn those fundamentals much faster.
So instead of staring at a blank screen feeling completely paralyzed, the beginner can prompt the AI to generate a working example of a login screen.
But then the critical step is that they must read and understand that generated code. They need to ask the AI to explain its own work line by line if a function looks unfamiliar.
So they use it as a tutor.
Precisely. They have to start with small, single-purpose scripts. Maybe a script that just sorts a list of numbers. You do that before attempting to build a fully authenticated SaaS product. The danger materializes when someone writes a vague, one-sentence prompt for a complex feature, accepts the 1,000 lines of code it spits out, and ships it without a basic comprehension of what it even does.
It requires immense discipline, honestly. You have to maintain rigorous version control. Using tools like Git and platforms like GitHub, it ensures that every single change the AI makes is tracked, documented, and can be instantly rolled back if it breaks something.
Right, you need that safety net.
You have to pair the AI's feature code with automated testing. It is a highly structured process. You can't just wing it.
And because that human review and that structural discipline is absolutely non-negotiable, it is fundamentally changing the conversation around the job market.
This is the part everyone worries about.
Right. A common fear was that AI would replace engineers. But the reality in 2026 is that it is not stealing engineering jobs. It is radically changing the job descriptions.
The guide points specifically to major global IT hubs like Hyderabad. Employers there aren't just tolerating the use of AI tools, they're explicitly mandating AI-assisted development as a core skill on job applications.
They expect it.
Yeah. They want developers who know how to collaborate with the AI, heavily augmenting their output, rather than someone who insists on typing every character manually and taking 5 times as long.
We are witnessing the creation of entirely new hybrid roles across the industry. We now have AI-assisted full-stack developers. They leverage these tools to generate the bulk of the code, but they retain total ownership over the final architecture, performance, and quality.
It's like being an executive instead of a line worker.
Yes. There is also a massive surge in demand for prompt engineers and workflow designers. These are professionals whose sole expertise is designing the optimal systems to extract reliable, secure output from various AI models.
And on the safety side, there are now QA and security reviewers whose entire daily function is auditing AI-generated code for those subtle logical flaws we discussed earlier. Plus, you've got DevOps engineers tasked with building incredibly robust pipelines and safety guardrails.
Those guardrails are vital. They ensure that even if a developer accidentally accepts a leaked secret or a broken function from an AI, the automated deployment system catches it and blocks it before it ever reaches production.
Looking at the trajectory for the rest of the decade, this integration is only going to deepen, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. The agentic capabilities of these tools will expand, meaning they'll be able to handle much longer multi-step tasks across larger code bases with much less frequent human intervention.
They'll still need humans, right?
Yes, they will be designed to flag the massive architectural decisions for human sign-off. And alongside that capability growth, we'll see the implementation of much stronger governance and audit trails, specifically engineered to track the origin and approval process of AI-generated code within large enterprise environments.
So what does this all mean for you navigating this landscape today? Personally, I find this entirely empowering. Think about the potential here. If you are a non-technical founder trying to build a SaaS MVP, you know, a software as a service minimum viable product, just to test your business idea, this workflow gives you the power to actually build it yourself.
It democratizes creation.
It really does.
Yeah.
Or if you are an intermediate coder who is just sick of writing the same database connections over and over, this workflow automates the boredom so you can level up to high-level system architecture. You gain superpowers, honestly. But only if you respect the process.
That's the key takeaway. The organizations and the individual developers realizing the highest return on investment are the ones treating AI strictly as a force multiplier. It must be contained within a disciplined framework.
Clear architectural specifications.
Yes. Continuous automated testing and rigorous human review at the critical junctures. It is an augmentation of engineering, not a replacement for it.
Vibe coding isn't blindly trusting an autocomplete tool while you go get coffee. It is an intense, iterative loop of prompting, reviewing, testing, and debugging. It is reading the draft, correcting your very fast junior developer, and making sure the plumbing actually holds water.
As the industry adapts to this new normal, it leaves us with a really profound question regarding the future of human skill and cognition.
What do you mean?
Well, if the beginners of 2026 are learning to code primarily by reading, reviewing, and editing AI-generated drafts, how will the fundamental intuition of a senior developer look 10 years from now?
Oh, wow.
If an entire generation of engineers never has to struggle through the frustration of a blank page and broken boilerplate syntax, does the human brain wire itself differently for problem solving?
Are we losing some essential grit by never facing that blank page? Or are we simply evolving past a historical bottleneck? That is something fascinating to mull over as you explore these tools yourself. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the 2026 landscape. If you've been on the fence, dive in this week. Pick a small problem, write a clear sentence, and see what it feels like to direct the code rather than type it. We will catch you on the next one.